You're listening to the Business Equation Podcast with Nick Bogaz. The solution to every equation in business and in life can be summed up with one word, mindset. Get ready as Nick takes you deep into the philosophy of mindset mastery, alongside entrepreneurs and professionals who've harnessed the power of clear, definitive thinking and leveraged it to build tangible success. And now, here's your host, Nick Bogaz.
Welcome back to the Business Equation Podcast. I'm your host, Nick Bogaz. Thank you for joining us each and every week. Thanks for all the likes, the follows, the shares, and all the reviews. And today we have a special guest, Aaron Stokes of Shop Fix Academy. Aaron's in the auto repair industry, and he's got a great story for us today. If you like a story of getting beat up and spit out and chewed up and then rising on top, then you're going to love today's episode. So without further ado, Aaron Stokes. Aaron, welcome to the show today.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, really happy to have you today. Would you mind giving our listeners the 411 on who you are and what brings you to the show today?
Yeah, so my name's Aaron. Got four kids, been married 22 years, and got five auto repair shops, a sales training organization, and a consulting firm. That's what I do, and stay very, very, very busy doing just that, trying to help other shop owners get their businesses turned around and fix cars in the meantime, and trying to help my employees move up in the world.
That's great. And where are you located?
I'm outside of Nashville, Tennessee.
Okay. And when did you get into the auto repair business?
I started in 1999 in a barn in my backyard, living in a single wide trailer.
So take us through that. So, you know, fast forward 22 years, sounds like, you know, you've been married for 22 years. If you do the math, yep. It's right around when you started your business. Yep. So you must have a very supportive wife who's been there next to you during this whole process. What was that like starting in the backyard like that out of a barn?
You know, I was ignorant. I was not very bright, and I did not know what I was entering into. But you know, that's the beauty of starting a business. If you're dumb enough to start it, you don't know how much pain it's going to cause. You probably have a pretty good chance of success. I think if somebody tells you this is going to really suck, this is going to hurt, you may not even attempt it. You may not even start. So I love that I was a little bit ignorant, or a lot ignorant. And we got married right then. I'd met my wife on the internet as a teenager back in '96 when the internet was just a wee baby. And we got married a couple years later, started having kids. And don't worry now, we're in a double wide. We've moved up just a smidge. We raised our kids in that little single wide trailer until we built a house and moved on, built another one, then moved on, built another one. But there was a lot behind that. And I've never worked for anyone else in the auto repair world. I've always just worked for myself. And then as we grew, I eventually got stolen from in 2012, set me back along, almost, it felt like it should have set me back a decade. It ended up setting me back about probably 4 years, 3 years, but it should have set me back a decade. But through God's grace, we got through that, and then ended up getting into consulting and then sales training. And then now a few other pieces that go along with auto repair. So yeah, it's kind of blown up since then.
When you said that you got stolen from in 2012, I'm taking that was kind of like a inside job with the employees. Like, you mind elaborating a little bit on that?
So I decided, instead of opening new locations, I'd do this real smart thing and get into used car sales. And I was working on high-end European cars out of three stores, doing about $4.5 million. I was 32 years old. I was making about $1 million a year. I had an eighth grade education. You know, I'd come from a single wide. I thought I had it figured out. And because I'd done it on my own and worked my way up, and I got a big piece of humble pie, and I got stolen from it. Ended up being when it was all said and done, just under $1.4 million, about $1.375 million, between the theft, the recovery, the debt I went into to pull it out. And it was a very rough time. Almost lost everything. That lasted multiple years trying to get that cleaned up and get out of that situation. And I was in trouble with the IRS, the Tennessee Department of Revenue. I was 4 hours from having my doors chained shut with sales tax being behind. I was behind on 941s, couldn't file bankruptcy, you know, owed franchise excise tax, owed employees retirement accounts, owed back rent. I owed everyone. And so I went from being everybody's darling child to all of a sudden overnight being, just the outcast. And what was worse was the timing. I just built a home. I just bought a bunch of rental cars. I had just remodeled a new location. And so I had spent basically $1 million on a bunch of different items. And it was really the perfect time to be stolen from and have it just about ruin me. So, and it was all due in 30 days. And I had bankers that bent over backwards for me that would let me run my checking account negative for payroll, $75,000, and would get in trouble, lose their bonuses, and go through all kinds of hell because they believed in my vision. And it was amazing to see people come to me and surround me. My accountant would process my tax return every year, and I'd owe him money every year and not be able to pay it, hoping I'd get a refund, and he'd see the refund come in. And he'd send me those little encouraging texts. Aaron, what are you going to do if you find yourself walking through hell? And I'd say, I don't know, Bill, what? And he'd say, keep walking, buddy, keep walking. And I just keep getting these text messages, and I'd keep having people encourage me just when I was just depleted enough. I thought I was about to quit. And I had no way out. I mean, I couldn't file bankruptcy because of the 941 debt. I had no way to close the businesses down. I mean, I was screwed. My debt payments were $122,000 a month. The principal was about $1,375,000. With all the interest and everything, it easily got closer to $3 million. It was just a very, very bad, bad time. And thank God my repair shops the whole time were making money. But at some point, it got so bad that I didn't know how to make more money out of them, and I needed to make even more, and I needed to have a better way to do that. So I came up with some proprietary ideas that I really feel like God kind of downloaded to me, and I wrote it down in a yellow pad and keyed it all out. And I now use these systems to teach other shop owners all over the place how to run their shops and make more profit as well.
So when you were going through all that, Was there kind of indicators that you were being stolen from, or did it just pop up all at once and kind of everything landed on you just all at once?
It was pretty all at once. You know, happened in November. We discovered it probably in February, and it started in November. It was fraud, and it's very complicated the way he was doing it. He was doing it with trade-ins, and he was moving money around. And those that have done used car sales, they know how easy it works. But I didn't know till later that the most complicated accounting in the world was used car sales. And I had never heard that before. And as I started asking accountants about it, they're like, oh yeah, we won't touch it. Oh yeah, we won't touch it. And I'd ask banks, oh yeah, we won't touch it. I was like, oh wow, this is like a really big problem. And once I discovered that, I knew that I was, I was in trouble. And I had a great accounting team, but they buried it. Anybody who knows anything about car sales, one transaction, if I was to compare it to auto repair, is almost like a day's worth of transactions in auto repair. So if you go from selling 30 cars a month to all of a sudden selling 60, 70 cars a month, all of a sudden your office is not anywhere near capable. You need twice the work load available to meet that demand. It's just, there's just so much paperwork with car sales. So he buried my accounting department. Cash went way up in the accounts. I thought I was making a lot of money. P&L's got to be about 60 days behind, then 75 days behind. And that's when I knew I was stolen from. And I had all my auto repair P&L's coming in every 30 days. So I had a lean and mean accounting department that was keeping up with everything fine until this took off. And that's one of the things I teach now is, you never want your accounting department to be lean. You always want bandwidth. You never know what might happen and what might come. So you've got to have the room to chase a problem if it appears.
And when you were ready to give up, you just decided like those text messages were really encouraging and you just decided you just got nowhere to go but forward. Is that what it was?
No, I was really giving up. There was a few times in my garage, I just broke down and would just cry and fall to my knees. I tried so hard to be what you would call a good person, to be a good Christian, to be a good father, a good husband, and to know that vendors were talking bad about me because I had commercials on the radio, but yet I couldn't pay my parts bill. To know that clients were upset because I couldn't give them their money back when they wanted a refund. You know, to know that employees were mad because they had to hold their checks from Friday to Monday. That sucked. To watch really good employees leave one by one by one, and they saw the ship sinking. That sucked. And it was very, 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 very painful. And as we got closer and closer and closer to it, getting really bad, somebody told me about a book by Ryan Holiday called The Obstacle is the Way. Little book. I picked it up. I start reading this little book, and this book basically covers, you know, when you find yourself against the enemy, you got the mountain on the left, you got the sea on the right, and the enemy's right in front of you, and it's blocking where you want to go. And the enemy, if they're out of the way, that is the fastest route. To go around the enemy and go over the mountain or go through the sea would take much longer. And when I read that book and I got to the main concept about three quarters of the way through it, that the obstacle is literally the way to go. It's trying to distract you from it, but that is the route. I closed that book. I jumped up, and I sleep in the driver's side of my bed. My wife sleeps in the passenger seat. So I jump up out of the bed, and we're both reading in our bed. I had the two, the traditional two lamp stands on. And I start marching around the bed all the way to the right and all the way back to the left. I was like, that's it. I'm going for it. I'm going to do this. And she's like, okay, fine. Yeah, whatever. Do it. And she was numb. You know, she just got numb from it all. But I finally got pissed off. I got angry. It beat me down so hard that I started losing my personality. And all of a sudden, I was like, I raised up. I puffed my chest out. I was in it. And I started seeing a way through. And I got really pissed off. And then as soon as I got mad, I started seeing progress. And that's when I started seeing breakthrough. And that's when I started seeing my old self come back full of piss and vinegar and ready to do this. But until I got angry, I allowed myself just to be beat down, which just kept killing my spirit and killing my spirit and killing my spirit. And I had had a bad temper as a young man from my father, who always had a bad temper. So I had always tried to bury my temper. Well, in doing so, I buried passion. And the only thing that was going to get me out of this was passion, not math. Not some new formula, not this or that. I needed passion. Now, later the formulas came to me. Later the math helped me. But before then, the human part of me needed its cup filled, right? I needed to be filled back up. I was on empty. I was bone dry. And the moment I got that passion faucet, if you will, turned back on, I started filling back up. And then I had that fire in my belly. But I had to kind of tiptoe into that area where I was a little pissed off to be able to do it.
And once that kind of fueled you and put you on the right path again, what were the other emotions you started to feel? Like once you went through the part of being pissed off, like in the passion, like was there a part where it just flipped to where it wasn't necessarily, was it wanting to make it right for all those people that were talking negative about you? Was there a part where you're like, you know what, I'm going to show them who I really am?
Yeah, there was a part, not revenge, but you know, one of those hold my beer comments, you know, you're like, watch this. And I don't drink, so that's a big deal. And I knew in my belly, like I had this fire starting to take off, and I knew this is part two. I was getting a do-over. And the moment I realized that, and I could see it like a video game, like I didn't need to put this pressure in myself that this was my only life. This is the end all be all. Because I kept thinking, you know, 10 years before this IRS debt falls off, there's no way out. They're going to garnish my wages. I'm going to lose a whole decade of my life. And I was just getting very depressed thinking about that. And the moment that I got pissed off and angry, I think courage had room to reappear, and it had not before. I think I finally started believing I had the right to enjoy myself. On the weekends, I would not let myself enjoy my family. I felt guilty for it because we owed so much money. To feel that I could enjoy myself, that I could be brave, that I could say, I deserve this, that to fight for myself and my family felt good. And I started to get a little bit of satisfaction finally out of it. Just seeing little, you know, little breakthroughs here and there. But don't get me wrong, as those little breakthroughs started compounding, that snowball got bigger and bigger, and the debt just started rolling off and rolling off and rolling off. And everything started to change rapidly.
And when everything started to change, was there a point where you realized that that more sales and more auto repair shops would help you get out of where you work too? Was there a mode of expansion that was in there?
Yeah, I ended up blowing up to 8 stores from 3. And one of the chains that I had bought, I bought 2 separate deals. And one of the chains I bought was just honestly a crap chain. One of them was one location in the chain was good. The rest of them were really, really poor. And I got out of those. I took them all on, but then I sold one of them off. And the other one I tried to sell, wasn't able to. I was able to get the landlord to convert it to a note and get him to sublease to somebody else. I found my way out, basically. But as I've navigated that, I found myself believing that sales fixes everything. But what I forgot was that profitable sales fixes everything. Mm. And I took on some bad locations that were just break-even stores. You know, and I thought, oh, I can kill it. I can do more than that last guy. He was a loser. And I got in there and go, oh, crap, I'm a loser too. This is a hard market. And all my stores have been in wealthy areas before. And so until you've been, I don't care if it's a lemonade stand or an auto repair shop, until you've been in a tough market, you don't know what it's like. You can get very arrogant thinking, I got this figured out. When, you know, you're doing 3 times the volume this other guy across town. This other guy across town, though, if he's got a tougher market, he might be twice the operator you are. You're not having to deal with near the challenges. So it was very eye-opening to realize that, you know, markets really played into the success of a business big time.
So the markets, would you consider that like location, or would you consider that more like the actual like towns and cities that you're opening in?
Both, because, you know, you could be in an okay town, but in the worst part of that okay town, or you could be in the best part of that okay town. So I would say both. But you want to be on the right street in the right town. And that's where you always make the most money. You know, location, 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 every single time. And all my stores are in great locations now. So yeah, I'm a big believer in that.
And do you own most of your buildings, or do you lease them?
I own one, lease the rest. I'm trying to buy them, but landlords in this market aren't wanting to sell. So yeah. They enjoy me being a good paying tenant. So I'm trying to, I own the office building I'm in now, and I own other buildings, but I like to own my own, but I'm not hung up on it. If I lease, it's fine. I'll own other real estate. It all works out to be the same math, but I do prefer it if I can.
So along that journey, I would have to think that part of you wanting to rectify everything too, was to be a good role model for your kids too. Is that really important to you as well, to kind of show them like, maybe they didn't know exactly what was going on, but I think sometimes kids pick up more than they let on sometimes.
Yeah, I was praying for my son one night. He's probably, he's 16 now, so I don't know. He was 8 or 9, something like that. But I'm praying for him one night, and he said, Daddy, do we have enough money to pay our bills today? And it just like, you know, it's like a dagger to the heart. You're like, oh my gosh, I suck. And your 9-year-old's looking at you like, do you need my $2 out of my bank account? And you're just like, ah. And that, I still remember that day. That rocked me. I went downstairs and told my wife, we're saying too much in front of the kids. They know what's going on. And she's like, what do you expect? I mean, it's all we're doing is surviving right now. And, you know, I'd be crushing it. I'd make 140 grand in a month and have 132 go straight out the door to pay debt. I just watch it go by. Couldn't do anything with it. And so if I wasn't clearing, you know, $1 million, $2 million, $4 million, I wasn't even able to stay open because I had to pay income tax on this. That's the problem. You know, I'm paying income tax on the money that I'm making to pay off the debt. I'm still the largest theft in the state of Tennessee at this point. I have a, you know, great record here in the state. And so, you know, it was a very, very scary time. My daughter, once I started consulting, my daughter, to give you an idea of the bond, I was up front teaching at an event, and she laid on the floor doing her math homework with her AirPods, and she's got her little feet up in the air. She's kicking them back and forth, and she just laid there on the floor right next to the podium, and I had about 250 people there. And they just thought it was the coolest thing, and she just wanted to be near her dad. You know, it drew us together. It made us a lot tighter. But, man, we lost some time, too. I mean, I was working 6 days a week. I only took off Sundays. And Sundays, I couldn't mentally turn it off. I just worried all day long. And it saddened me because there are so many businesses right now that are literally going down into this right now, right? They're lying to themselves. They're taking on a new charge account. They're using up a credit line at the bank. And they're slowly going down. But because they don't understand their numbers, they don't even realize that they're going further and further into the hole. When right now they could do something and they won't do anything drastic until they're hundreds of thousands in the hole. And then they get to me and I'm like, oh my gosh, I hope I can pull you out of this. Because a lot of them don't have the drive that I did. So it's rough to see that happen. It's rough to see that manifest before you and know that you could stop it if they would just listen.
Yeah, I appreciate your honesty when you're talking about the giving up part. And you say, oh no, I almost gave up a bunch of times. Because I think that's the hard part is I think when you have your own business, everybody has different challenges. But when you get on the other side of them, that's when you can kind of reflect like you are now. And it has to feel really good to where you are today compared to where you've been. And I think part of it is never losing part of that identity that, you know, if you can go through that, I would imagine when, you know, March 15th rolled around last year and we get hit with COVID and it changes the world, that you're like, hey, I got this. I went through something that was 10 times this. I can handle it. Not knowing really what it was, but you knew that there had to have been a part of you that felt like, boy, I'm kind of prepared for adversity.
Yeah, I had been consulting probably 4 years at that point, and COVID hit. And I was in Turks and Caicos with my family, and my wife said, you need to do a webinar every single night this week. I was like, really? She's like, yeah. So I went on live and I just started breaking down all the scientific studies about the disease, what I saw the government doing, what I saw interest rates doing, what the stock market was doing. And there was several nights I had over 1,000 people watching. So I was like, okay, this is going somewhere. Then I kept doing it. I got all the way home and did it all the way through until, gosh, I went from March 15th to April 15th. Till tax day. And I did it every single night except Sunday night, 6 days a week. And we flew back home on Sunday and I just kept doing it. And I would go from 8 p.m. till about 10:30 at night. And then from April 15th to April 30th, I did it five nights a week. My wife was like, you got to pull back some. The family's fried, you're fried. And so I cut Saturday nights. And I had at some points, guys, 4,000 to 5,000 people on live, on a Facebook live. I didn't know it. It was chiropractors. It was doctors. It was attorneys. It was people that owned dry cleaners. And it was everybody that owned an auto repair shop was telling their buddies. And so I had about 600 clients of myself, and all of my clients told all of their friends, and it just went like a wildfire. And I was bringing on the best accountants I could find in the country, the best attorneys, everybody that did anything with employee HR issues, et cetera, because we were all having them with employees not wanting to come to work, et cetera. So it was a very, very rough time. But what was nuts was my consulting company grew during that period of time. We ended up giving all of our members half off that month. We had a bunch that were freaking out. So we just went ahead and gave them half off. And I'm proud to say that by the end of COVID, probably 95% of all of our clients got both the PPP money and the EIDL grant. And we're able to apply for the EIDL loan at the end. And we walked them through all of it. And all of my competition, I would say that it would be probably the best, maybe was 50% of theirs, if not maybe only 30%. We had a lot of clients coming to us saying none of them were talking about it or teaching on it. And so, me going through that allowed me to even lead them when I had no idea where I was going, by God's grace, to get everybody to the other side and get them the loans and the funding they needed to stay open. And that was a very, very hard time. Probably the closest to burnout I've ever been in my life was last year during that 6 weeks. It was harder than when I got stolen from, not emotionally, harder just physically, because my own stores were in trouble. I was going in there, cutting everyone's pay, telling everybody you're on hourly, we're in survival mode. We epoxied floors, we, you know, painted walls. We did whatever we could. But our business cut in half overnight. And so we were in total survival mode. It was very, very scary. And our team stood behind us. They backed us, but we got through it. And every day I'd get home at 6:30, 6:45. My wife would give me some food. I'd wolf it down real quick. I'd jump in front, make some notes in front of my camera, turn the camera on. About 7:45, start talking to people. 8 o'clock start, and I'd end about 10:30 to 11:30, depending on what was going on that night. And I did that every night for six nights in a row, and then I did it five nights in a row. But I didn't know it. I mean, I was exhausted. At the end, I'd go to a conference, and people would tell me, Aaron, had you not done that, I don't know where I would have been. Every night, I'd start to watch TV. I'd get too stressed out, and I'd be thinking, what's Aaron talking about? And they'd turn me on their TV, and they said that it was keeping them hopeful, keeping them alive. At the time, I didn't realize it was that impactful, but it was because of what I've been through. And so I appreciate you making that connection. It was a strength that was needed later, that's for sure.
Yeah, it almost seems like you were used in that moment too. Like, you know, it set you up back then, and then, you know, before you know it, you're leading packs of people, really. And I think you're absolutely right. The business owners, didn't matter really what industry they were in, if they're small business owners who got into their profession and they've made a livelihood of it, they just needed somewhere to turn and practical stuff, because there was stuff out there. I think there were people that realized that they could try and make money off of COVID, and they were doing different kind of, seminars that were paid to play and stuff like that. Yep. But I think that the guys out there just talking, like, here's what I'm doing in my business. I'm sure you can grab a few things out of there. And you're absolutely right about like the PPP money. Like, people didn't know how to fill it out. They didn't know where to go. They go to the bank they've been with for 20 years, and the bank didn't even know how to tell them to fill out the forms. And yeah, I think there's a lot of connections there of what you did was just real good, good work, and just paying it forward, really.
Yeah, we had clients that hadn't gotten funding, and we were able to get them either with my bank here, or we were putting them with PayPal, with QuickBooks and others. We were finding every oddball company and helping everyone figure out how to do it, what to fill out, what forms to turn in, and we're getting them funded in 2 to 3 days. I mean, hundreds of them all at once. And but we weren't going to let anybody fall through the cracks. And 95% is conservative. I bet we were closer to 98-99% of our clients that got funded. So I was very proud of that.
So what about now? When most people are saying we're out of COVID, I think most small businesses are really feeling the after effects of like the employee crisis that's going on. Are you feeling it in your line of business? And what are you telling your folks out there that you're teaching and leading and consulting with about the job market right now?
Yeah, so I'm not feeling it in the office as much, in the office world, but I am definitely feeling it in the auto repair world. We have C, B, and A level technicians, A being the best. And a lot of those C level guys that were making 50 grand could go sit at home and make 45, 50 grand. So why go to work, right? So a lot of them checked out of the market, which put more pressure on B techs than more pressure on A techs. And then on top of that, new cars started getting depleted. And as they got depleted because factories were shut down, then factories started coming back on. But if another factory that was producing another part for that car wasn't also getting turned back on, we had unbalanced inventory supply chains. So everything might be there, but this one thing. And then we'd get that one thing, and then something else would pop up, et cetera. So we went from, let's say, out of 100 cars on the road, if 20 of them were under 2 years old, meaning they needed no service, now 90 of them need service and only 10 don't, because no one can buy new cars. So people are buying, 10-year-old cars, two-year-old cars, one-year-old cars instead. And so now cars that normally would sit in the lot for a while and not need a timing belt all of a sudden need a timing belt because they're not sitting there for sale. They're actually being driven. And so it's ramped up the auto repair world. So we're probably going to have a crazy year, but skilled labor is where I'm seeing the shortage. Blue collar, skilled labor. And it's not a lie. It is absolutely real. And until we get a lot of that unemployment to stop, like ours stops, I think, in Tennessee, July 2nd, we're not going to see some of that lower level talent start getting back into the market, which then relieves a little bit more at the higher level, and then so on and so on and so on. And we need that. We need that gradual stair step that people used to do. The government intervention, in a lot of ways, actually hurt us more than helped us. They put too much support out there which allowed people to stay home too long and create some bad habits for them, right? They're not going to be embracing dignity and hard work, et cetera. What makes, you know, a man or a woman really be proud of what they've achieved. And instead, we've turned us into a society of, well, what's in it for me? You know, I'm going to get what's for my family and mine. And the sad thing about that is if we all become selfish in that way, that's the end of America, right? If we all become selfish and I'm going to go out and I'm going to, in a healthy way, go out and work and achieve for my family what I want my family to have, then that's healthy. But if we're going to go out and demand and have a handout, that's not. And so with all of that happening in our industry and technicians going up like crazy as far as cost, I mean, I'd have a guy making 40 bucks an hour and all of a sudden he's like, if you don't give me 47, I'm walking. And you're like, what the heck do I do? And you know, that kind of an attitude, because they've got literally customers faking that they're customers, getting a test drive, riding with a technician, offering them in the car $50 an hour to go work in another shop. I mean, it was so cutthroat because every shop is just so buried across the country. So it's a tough market. We're teaching people hiring techniques. We're teaching people how to write a good ad and what kind of offers they got to put out there to get someone to actually show.
So. And that was going to be my question to you, listening to you, was going to ask about, have you had to increase your salaries? And you kind of answered that yeah, absolutely, you've had to increase your salaries. And I think you hinted towards my follow-up question was going to be, did you have to raise your prices because you had to pay your employees more?
Not yet. I'm advising my clients to wait. Our parts have gone up. And so because of that, our parts go through a multiplier matrix, which has already raised the price of our parts. So there's a little bit more profit on that side naturally. We are very close to having to raise our prices though on labor. So that's around the corner.
And how do you feel about like when shortly here, when you put some ads out, you get people that are going to apply and you look at their resume and then for the last year or longer, there's a gap that their last job was in early 2020. And you realize this is somebody that was home for 15 months and took the unemployment for that long. And now they're ready to re-enter the workforce. Like,
you know, it was easy to judge that in the beginning, but now you just got to go, you know what? I'm sure they're a good person, because I had friends that I had found out. They're like, yeah, I guess I'm going to stay home. I mean, blah, blah, blah. And I'm going, really? I kind of liked you. You know, so it's like, and I'm not trying to be judgmental, but when you own your own business, there's no option. You got to go to work. But then when you see someone just say, yeah, I'm just not going to go because I don't have to. And there's no way to prove it. There's no way to prove it's not, quote, COVID. You know, that was tough. That was definitely tough to not judge someone. And so when you found yourself doing it, you kind of had to say, well, do I need an employee? Yes. All right. Well, I guess I got to get over it. You're not going to be able to get only entrepreneurial type thinking employees. You got to get people that are going to jump in and make it happen. And that's what I had to do. So sometimes you got to ignore that part of the resume.
I like that. I really do. Because I think that's what people are going through right now. They're in that moment of trying to figure out, should they judge, shouldn't they judge? And you're right. You know, the employers are just in a spot where they just need to hire. And I think
we don't have a choice.
Yeah. No, you're absolutely right. You have to hire. It really doesn't matter what industry. I think everybody's seeing it. What do you say to the entrepreneurs that have listened to us today and they hear your story and they may be going through something that in their life feels like what you went through back in 2012 and 13. Like, what kind of advice do you have for them?
You know, I would tell them to not give up. Surround yourself with positive people. Don't keep it a secret. Get outside perspectives on how to fix your situation. I think I could have got out of my situation in a year if I'd had more wisdom around me. I made several panic and fearful decisions that I wish I had not made. So I would encourage people, get smart people around you. If you do that, that will make all the difference in the world.
I'd like to mention this too. I'm curious, like, how important it was having a good lawyer at that point.
It did not help me as much as I thought. The number one thing that helped me was being savvy, quick, nimble, and able to adjust. Those were the things. I couldn't get emotional about it. Somebody didn't work out. Okay, great. Move on to the next one. This didn't happen. Okay, great. Whatever. If I couldn't sit there and go, oh man, this sucks. I mean, I had to just keep taking action, 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 massive action over and over in a row, commit, you know, came together to create momentum for me. And that momentum is what got me out of it. And I'm going to be honest, I had some kick-ass employees that stuck with me through all of it that I have rewarded today. A lot of them didn't. Those ones that did, I took care of them.
What's on the future agenda for you?
You know, I'm going to keep growing my shops. I'm going to open more. But my number one thing right now is probably going to be just focusing on the consulting side. That is blowing up. It's getting larger every day. I at this moment run one of the largest masterminds in the world. And it just happens to be focused on auto repair, which is pretty cool. Had a lot of people fly out just to see our mastermind in action and see how we have it designed and how we run it. And I'm very proud of the community we've built. It's filled with the most amazing people on the planet. They are what makes it so great. And I'm totally blessed to be here and to have the Lord make this an option for me to even be a part of it. It's just huge. So the future is really going to be me focusing on raising up leaders in that area of expertise in auto repair so that I can get them to become something great in their town, in their community.
And if people want to get more of you, Aaron, and find out, learn more about your story, learn more about what you're doing today, where can they find more about you?
I would say probably on Facebook, Shop Fix Academy's Facebook page. Also, they can probably look on YouTube. We're updating some new stuff there. We operate a lot inside of Facebook groups, so a lot of people have no idea how large our organization is because we keep it somewhat hidden. But those are probably the best places to follow along and see what's going on.
Now it's time we solve the equation to Aaron's success. This is when I get to ask you 7 rapid fire questions to solve the equation to your keys of success. Are you ready?
Oh boy. Okay.
All right. Best seminar or teaching that you've ever been to?
I was in a guy named Greg. I was in his living room sitting on the couch, and that changed my life in 2006. 10 people in attendance.
Favorite item you bought recently under $100?
I'm looking around thinking I'm not very material. I'd say a pair of sunglasses, Serengetis.
Name an idol or hero of yours that you've met in person.
Probably Marcus Lemonis.
Favorite book to give as a gift?
Be My Guest by Conrad Hilton.
Something you do every morning before you brush your teeth?
I look at the schedule for the day.
Your personal mantra or favorite quote?
Do whatever it takes, company.
And place you go to decompress and reset?
My lake house.
All right, Aaron, thanks so much for being a guest on the show today. I hope everybody enjoyed the conversation as much as I did. And we look forward to watching online the future that you keep moving forward and doing some great things. So thanks so much for being on today, Aaron.
Thanks, guys. I appreciate you.
Thanks for joining us today. I know I loved hearing Aaron's story. As an entrepreneur, I always think find hope in other people's success. And this was a really good episode to kind of focus on. And I'm sure there's people out there listening that are in a rough spot. And as Aaron said, just don't quit. And if you're enjoying everything, please review us, rate us, follow us on social media, and check us out over on LinkedIn. Next week, we'll have Carl Meyer on. Carl comes with another good story. He comes with a lot of information. I think you're going to enjoy hearing Carl on the show next week. I enjoyed interviewing him, and we'll catch him on the next episode of The Business Equation. This has been Nick Bogaz. Give thanks, be humble, be great.
Thank you for joining us for today's Mindset Journey on the Business Equation Podcast. Now it's time for you to take what you learned today and put it to work in your life each and every day. Please subscribe to the show wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts so you're the first to know when new episodes go live. We'll see you next time on The Business Equation, where the solution is always in the mindset.